Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome back to Stomp This Way. Today, we are discussing a very important film recently come out in the fandom. Not quite a kaiju movie, but it is kaiju adjacent. We've already done some kaiju adjacent films for this podcast, but we'll be doing another one today. But it follows with the previous film that we just did, because this is the conclusion of the Shin trilogy, if you will. And we're talking, of course, about Shin Kamen Rider.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is our second time watching it, right?
Yeah.
Courtesy of Amazon Prime, because we saw it once in theaters.
You know, more people showed up for that than Ultraman.
Well, to be fair, this one that did not release as wide as they did Kamen Rider. I mean, Ultraman. We actually had to drive to Broken Arrow, which is basically a suburb of Tulsa, to the Regal and watch it there. And yeah, there were a few people there.
A few people.
Maybe, I don't know, about a third full, half full maybe.
Yeah.
Which, if we'd have driven to the Regal for the Ultraman thing, it probably would have been about the same crowd. But anyway, so we did see this in theaters, as you point out. It was a cool experience in theaters. Just tell the listeners where you and I are at as far as Kamen Rider goes. We have watched the first five shows. Kamen Rider.
Kamen Rider, V3.
X. Amazon.
Stronger. And Super One.
And then we're working on Super One.
So we're on the sixth.
Yeah. So we've watched five. We just started Super One.
Yeah.
So we watched the first five. So obviously we haven't watched every single episode like we have Ultraman, but we're pretty deep into it. We haven't watched any of the newer shows.
No.
So if you have watched some of the newer shows, just know that we haven't watched those. So we apologize if we're ignorant of anything past Super One. But yeah, so that's kind of where we're coming from. But when we watched this movie, we had watched at least the two that matter, which is the original in V3, because those are the two, as far as I know, that this movie draws all of its references from. So, anyway, let's get into some show notes here. I'm going to bring back a segment which hasn't been around for a while, that is alternate titles.
Oh, my.
I just have one. The literal translation is, which is what they titled it under on Amazon Prime, is Shin Masked Rider. Although, I guess not really a translation, because they didn't translate Shin. So I guess the literal translation would be Return of Kamen Rider. You know, Shin can kind of mean several different words. I think we talked about that in our Shin Godzilla review. But yeah, so Kamen basically means mask. So Kamen Rider, Masked Rider. But anyway, I digress. So some production trivia. This is the third film in the Shin series, like I've already said. This is the first one that Shinji Higuchi was not involved in the production. There's a bit of a delay in my headphones, so I'm trying to like talk over myself. Ono became good friends with the Toei producer during the production of Evangelion 3, and they began planning a Kamen Rider reboot. The film was announced on the 50th anniversary of the very first episode. Meant to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Kamen Rider. However, it missed the anniversary by a couple of years due to COVID. Filmed from October of 2021 through January of 2022. They originally wanted to do an all-CGI bike, but ultimately decided against it due to time and budget concerns. They shot several sequences with iPhones, and Ono began planning for a potential sequel while still filming this film, which he had tentatively titled Shin Kamen Rider Masker World. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, a little bit of box office information. Released March 17th of 2023 in Japan. Opened number 2 at the Japanese box office with about, converted to US dollars, $4.12 million. And ultimately grossed around $16 million, making it the highest grossing Kamen Rider film, but by far the lowest grossing Shin film. I think about half the proceeds of Ultraman, and I think Godzilla made a little over 80 million. So
it didn't do that well.
No, way below that. But anyway, we're going to listen to a trailer.
Ooh.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Read a plot summary that I just wrote after we just watched it. And then we'll discuss everything about Shin Kamen Rider. See you in a bit.
僕の名はライダー仮面ライダーと名乗らせてもらう
君は組織が開発した昆虫合成型オーグメンテーションプロジェクトの最高傑作だ
これをかぶると暴力の加減がまるでできなくなる
その辛さをあなたが背負うことで誰かが幸せになってる
誰かを守って戦うとはそういうことでしょ
今から政府公認のアンチショッカー同盟だ
ではお見せしよう変身
人は人を信じることで生き延びてきた
他人を信じることで裏切られてもきた
僕は人を守りたいと思う自分の心を信じる
生まれし者はショッカーに帰るそれが筋よね
あなたも同じオーグメントなのにこの幸せがなぜわからんのです
裏切りペアは必ず殺す
やはり人間は面白い
さあレッツパーティー
俺は俺なりのやり方で人類を救う仮面ライダー第0号だ
あなたのプラン魂の自由を取り戻して
信じてあなたに託す仮面ライダー本郷たけしさん
All right, we're back. This film is directed by Hideaki Anno, written by Hideaki Anno. Music by, not Shiro Sagesu this time, they got a new guy, Taku Iwasaki. He fits by Atsuki Sato, who I believed was in charge of effects for the last two Shin films, or involved at least. And starring There's a lot of people in this movie, so I only did the three most important. Sasuke Ikimatsu, Minami Hamabe, who has most recently been the lead actress in Godzilla Minus One, and then Kasuku Emoto. And they play Hongo, Ruriko, and Ichimonji, respectively. So the three heroes of the movie. And the plot summary is as follows. After Professor Midorikawa becomes disenfranchised with the evil organization Shocker, he turns Takashi Hongo into the Grasshopper Og, otherwise known as Kamen Rider. He entrusts the safety of his daughter, Ruriko, to Hongo before being killed by a Shocker agent. Teaming up with government agents Taki and Tachibana, Hongo and Ruriko go on a quest to defeat the Shocker cyborgs across Japan. However, the final Og is the Butterfly Og, who happens to be Ruriko's brother, Ichiro. Ichiro has created a Grasshopper Og 2.0, whose real name is Hayato Ichimonji. Ruriko is able to free Ichimonji of Shocker's mind control, and he begins calling himself Kamen Rider 2. But she is killed by another Shocker cyborg. Ruriko is able to upload her prana to Hongo's helmet, and using her plan, Hongo and Ichimonji confront Ichiro. Ichiro redubs himself Kamen Rider Zero, and the three Kamen Riders engage in battle. The two good riders eventually prevail, and Ichiro dies, but Hongo depletes his store of prana during the fight and dies as well. However, the government agents retrieve the helmet, which has the prana of Hongo stored inside. Ichimonji dons the refurbished helmet, and with the spirit of Hongo literally in his head, the two ride off to continue their fight against Shocker as Kamen Rider V3. Basically. So, yeah. I think to start, for the listeners that haven't watched any Kamen Rider before this, let me just kind of fill you in on the first two shows, which are the two that really this movie draws on. The original Kamen Rider show, released in 1971, ran 97, 98 episodes, something like that. Ran for a while. And the show, you know, the basic premise was much like this movie if you watched it. This guy was turned into a cyborg by Shocker. Then he turned against Shocker. And then he teamed up with, in the show, he did team up with someone named Tobe Tachibana and someone named Taki. Now, they weren't government agents as portrayed in this film. Tachibana was like he changed jobs a lot, but I think he started as like a motor shop, like a motorbike shop maintenance guy who also had like some kind of candy front or store that was a candy shop front.
Candy coffee shop.
Candy coffee shop thing. I don't know. It seemed to kind of change throughout the show. And then Taki, who was an FBI agent, not a CIA agent, which would have made a lot more sense, but an FBI agent who, for some reason, was stationed in Japan. Then there was a bunch of female characters that would come in and out of the show. Ruriko, I believe, was the name of the first woman that was in the show. So we have Takashi Hongo. He was the first Kamen Rider. I believe he was the Kamen Rider for like the first, I want to say 17 episodes. And Ruriko was the main female lead during those first 17 episodes. However, in real life, while filming, he did all the stunts himself, as far as I am aware. And during one of the stunts, he had like the bike fell over on him and shattered his leg or something. So then they brought in a replacement, Kamen Rider 2, as he would come to be known as Ichimonji in the show. And Ichimonji was like, he was like a photographer, kind of like he talks about in this film. He was like a photographer who, for whatever reason, he was turned into a cyborg as well. And so after, you know, the actor playing Hongo had his accident, he comes in as a new character and joins up with Tachibana and Taki. And he's on the show for a while. And then they bring back Hongo for a while. And then towards the end, they were both in the show virtually every episode. So that is the basic setup of the show. And then in V3, Hongo and Ichimonji, quote unquote, die in the first episode. And they hand it off to a new guy who is Kamen Rider V3. So a little different than how they do it in this, at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and of course, you had Shocker, and they had all their evil cyborgs, and they had the combatants. They usually had some kind of evil commander that was above the cyborgs throughout the show, which I guess you could kind of say that Ichiro is kind of in that role. Mm-hmm. And then there was always like the evil leader of the organization, who I guess is I in this show, which they don't really tackle I in this show too much, other than a passing mention. Mm-hmm. I think they saved that for a sequel that based on box office performance, we probably won't get.
Probably not. He was in one scene.
I was in one scene, and then his servant or whatever, Kay, was in and out of the movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's the basic framework of the Kamen Rider show. And then, you know, just like Ultraman, they come out with a new show. They'd come out with a new show basically every year, and there'd be a slight variation on the formula and, you know, whatever, whatever. So anyway, getting to this film, I was excited when it was coming out. By that time, we were pretty ingrained in Kamen Rider.
Yes.
And of course, it's coming from the creators of Shin Godzilla, Shin Ultraman. And I have to say, when we sat down and watched it for the first time in that theater, it immediately catches you off guard.
Yeah.
Because there is almost immediate blood splatter in this movie.
It starts off with a bang.
Yeah, I mean, the show. Now, I have read that some of the newer Kamen Rider shows airing on TV more recently are darker and more violent and more adult oriented. But, you know, this comes from the same kind of kid oriented origin as Ultraman and everything. Now, of course, shows back then meant for kids were more violent than shows are now. But still, it kind of threw me off initially that we were all of a sudden getting blood splatter. I was like,
I mean, oh, it wasn't just a little blood splatter either.
No. This opening scene, him and Ruriko are, it throws you right into it. Him and Ruriko are on the bike trying to get away from these two vans, chakra vans or trucks that are trying to catch him in a web between him or whatever. Just a classic shocker plot. Yeah, but once he gets those combatants out, he literally is just bashing their faces in, blood splattering everywhere, kicking them.
Buckets of blood.
Just blood everywhere. Which, yeah, I was like, whoa, this is not the movie I thought we were in for. I will say, the blood splatter is most extreme here in this first scene.
Yeah.
It kind of becomes less prevalent as the movie goes on. It's kind of funny, though, because the rating at the beginning of the movie, when it plays, whatever market they rated this in, says PG-12. I don't know if that's for Japan or some other international market, but if this was rated in the U.S., this would be a pretty hard R.
Yeah.
Because the U.S. will allow quite a bit, but they do not allow red blood splatter in PG-13 movies.
Especially not this much.
Especially not to the extent that maybe you get away with like one time, but not like they do in this movie. But yeah, so the movie opens up, that happens, and then you kind of, in the tradition of Hideaki Anno movies that I've seen, you kind of immediately get like once he defeats those initial combatants, you get a huge data dump that basically tells you almost everything you need to know to understand what's going on. The professor comes in and tells Hongo, I defected from Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
Shocker is, I don't know, trying to bring about happiness for all humans, but, you know, just like your classic AI story, it decided that the best way to do that was to wipe out most humanity. So he created Hongo, turned Hongo into a grasshopper Og to fight Shocker, and he wants him to work with his daughter, Ruriko. Ruriko is also kind of a cyborg. She was, from the way I understand it, basically created in a lab as a kind of another creation of her father's. And her power is she can store data in her eyeballs or something. But anyway, so you get the big data dump. And then, yeah, the movie kind of goes off. I will say, much like, I mean, this is an Anno movie through and through.
Yeah.
You get, you know, the stuff I like about Anno, like the cool camera, all the varying cool camera angles where he slaps cameras, probably iPhones in this case,
yeah,
on the sides of car doors and underneath trucks and just anywhere he can put a camera. You get the other stuff that you may not like about Anno, the huge exposition dumps about every 20 minutes. The rapid editing.
Yeah.
Just it's dialogue heavy.
It's really prominent in this movie.
Yeah.
Rapid editing. It's a lot worse than, I think, in Shin Godzilla and Shin Kamen Rider.
I don't know. I think if anything, he dials it back a little bit in this movie because I'll give him credit, at least compared to the other two Shin movies. This one by far, I think, has the most character work. He actually has two main leads that are established at the very beginning of the movie that have clearly defined character arcs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it's like the greatest character he's ever written or anything, but compared to the other Shin movies, a huge leap forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I talked about an Ultraman, how that kind of felt like five episodes they had remade and then kind of stitched together.
Yeah.
I don't think the seams are as evident in this movie.
No.
But it still kind of feels like a few episodes they liked and remade and kind of stitched together. Now, I think it, the story kind of, you know, develops a little better. Flows better through those episodes. Builds upon itself better than an Ultraman movie. But you still kind of have, like, the Spider-Og episode, then the Bad-Og episode, then the Wasp-Og episode, and then the episode where they go visit Ichiro the first time.
I think they edited it together way better than they did in the Ultraman thing, where it doesn't feel like it this episode, then another episode, then another episode. It actually flows through the storyline better.
Yeah. And then it kind of concludes with the, whatever you want to call it, the episode where she dies from the mantis chameleon thing. And then you have the final episode where Ichimonji and...
fights the final boss.
And yeah, and Hongo fight Kamen Rider Zero. But yeah, you know, I like the character work. You have Hongo, who he's trying to reckon with. He wants to bring peace and help people, mm-hmm. be kind to people. But when he puts on the mask, he becomes kind of violent. And he deals with the bad guys in violent ways. Lots of blood splatter.
Ugh.
You have Ruriko, who kind of starts off as this really cold, distant character. And kind of warms up to Hongo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, nice character work there for those two. And they even do some character work for the bad guy, Ichiro, who we don't actually meet Ichiro till over halfway through the film. But, you know, he starts off as this, again, kind of cold, distant bad guy who, at the end of it, you know, shows that he still loves his sister and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Ichimonji. I say it different every time, don't you?
Yeah.
It's a little different than most, like, there's Ichinose, which I've heard a lot, but this is Ichimonji, Hayato Ichimonji. I mean, no, he's kind of a do-it-himself kind of guy, doesn't like teamwork, doesn't like working for the man, but he comes to terms with that he has to work together with Hongo.
Yeah.
And then literally Hongo is going to end this movie in his head, talking to him. In his head, which is a little weird, but
finds out working with somebody is better than being by yourself.
That's right. Teamwork is always better. There's no I in team or whatever, but there isn't me, according to Taylor Swift. I'm sorry. Anyway, now I got that song stuck in my head. I can't even finish this review. Yeah, so I like that stuff. I also like all the callbacks. You know, Anno, he's made it clear in a lot of interviews. He's a big fan of Kamen Rider. He can, just like us, he can list most of the old school Showa era Kamen Rider shows in order and tell you everything that happened in them. The callbacks he does are a lot of fun. I mean, the obvious stuff, you know, they're faithful to the Kamen Rider design, bringing back Hongo Takeshi, Ichimonji, Ruriko, bringing back Tachibana, Taki, even if they're a little bit different. And then, you know, just the other stuff, the Kamen Rider kick, the Kamen Rider punch, the bike,
the cyclone,
the bike, the what?
The double rider kick.
The double rider kick. the way that when the bad guys die, they just kind of dissolve into foam.
Or explode.
They don't explode in this movie.
Yeah, the the fake Kamen Riders, when they destroyed them, they exploded.
They did explode, you're right. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, callbacks galore. The way that, you know, they call them Augs in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the initial Augs are just one insect or whatever creature it is, merged with a human. And then just like in V3, like, then they have like two insects or two creatures merged with the human. So the chameleon guy, there's then the chameleon slash Mantis slash human guy. Mm-hmm. Just like you'd get in V3. So, you know, he's digging deep for the references here. And I appreciate it. So, just like Ultraman, I think it hits more than it misses. There are still things that bother me. I think at 2 hours, especially the way this film is structured, like where, you know, you defeat one bad guy, you go fight a stronger one, kind of like a video game. Then you fight a stronger one and stronger one until you meet the final boss. I think at 2 hours, which is the longest Shin film, even if just by a few minutes, it kind of drags. Especially that third act after she dies, I can feel the length. Like in the Ultraman show, that kind of fifth and final episode where they had to deal with the Zetton problem, it kind of dragged, but it was still a shorter segment of the film. This one, I can really feel it dragging during that third act.
Yeah, after Rico.
R-U-R-I-K-O. Ruriko.
After Ruriko dies, it really just comes slowly inching until the final battle happens and all that.
Yeah. And I will say, I don't find the fight scenes in this movie super exciting. They're kind of fun at first, but I mean, budget limitations, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then especially that final fight, it's just poorly choreographed. A lot of it is just, at first, it's just like, you know that Dooku Anakin fight where it would just, because Christopher Lee couldn't do stunts, so they would just have the camera facing one person and you'd see the lightsaber waving in front of their face. Then it would face Hayden Christensen and you'd just see the lightsaber waving in front of his face. It's kind of how I felt about this final fight with Kamen Rider Zero. Even though all three of them are males in their prime, if someone would have bothered to do some choreography with him, I think they could have done it. But yeah, the choreography is just not that great. And then we'll talk about effects later. I think that kind of has an effect on it too.
Especially the last bit of the fight where they're just kind of hugging each other. And
yeah, where they're like all out of energy. So they're just kind of rolling around on the floor. Just But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, the quote unquote love story, although he says they don't have a romantic relationship, they have a relationship built on trust. The way that, you know, I wish, like, when she goes to encounter the wasp woman, you know, it said that they were, like, best friends or whatever. If we would have had a scene earlier or even just a flashback to establish what their relationship like was like before this encounter, then it would have meant more. I would have felt more. Same thing with her brother. I mean, we get some flashbacks. The brother, like, sees his dead mom and some flashbacks. But we really don't see what their relationship was like before they went their separate ways. And I would have felt more other than, oh, that's kind of sad, I guess, if we'd have seen that stuff. But, you know, is what it is. But overall, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think it hits more than it misses.
Yeah.
But still an imperfect movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you, the backstory on some of the stuff could have used a little bit more work and could have felt a lot more than what you did going into it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just threw you in there and just hoped you enjoyed it in some parts of that movie.
Yeah. I kind of wish they, I don't know, he says something about early in the film about what Hongo did in college, which somehow led him to being chosen to be the cyborg or whatever. They never really go back to that. They do towards the end of the film reveal that his father, which I was a little confused because I didn't know how much Hongo remembered of his past. But I guess he remembers all of it because it's revealed towards the end of the movie that his father had been a cop. I think he was, didn't they say he was like 9?
Yeah.
His father had been a cop who had been shot by a criminal because his father was trying to save the hostage and not kill the criminal at the same time. Mm-hmm. So he kind of struggled because he thought that his father had been too nice. And if he had just used his gun, he would have lived.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he kind of comes to agree with his father and see his father's point of view that he just wants to protect everyone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that, again, that's a nice little character moment, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't reveal the two government agents' names mm-hmm. until the end of the movie. Now, the first time we saw the movie, I was like, that's going to be Tachibana and Taki.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear. And the guy playing Taki is the guy that played Ultraman in the previous film. And, of course, the guy playing Tachibana has been in all 3 Shin films. But, yeah. You want to go into creature design?
Why not?
All right. So, what do we got? Let's talk about Kamen Rider. Class, have you seen the original Kamen Rider?
He looks
pretty similar. Mm-hmm. Now, they do some neat stuff that they don't show us in the original show. Well, first of all, I do not believe in the original show that it had ever specifically said that he is a grasshopper.
I think it did.
I don't think it did.
In the first show.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember that. But I'll take your word for it. Because to me, that was news watching this movie. But anyway, he's a grasshopper og. It does show us under what it looks like under his mask when he transforms.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of got, you know, the green eyes and the veins or whatever. They introduced this new thing, this prana thing, which is like, I don't know, I guess like chi. It's like the life force of every living being or whatever that they absorb to become, to, you know, power up or whatever.
That might be in later shows.
Yeah, it might be in later shows. I don't know. But yeah, so all that stuff is neat. But yeah, he's very much the classic Kamen Rider design with the bike and everything. And then Kamen Rider 2, same thing. Now, in the original show, when they first transitioned from Kamen Rider, from Hongo to Ichimonji, I think their suits were the same.
Yeah.
But once they were both in the show at the same time, they started, like, putting, like, those white stripes on Kamen Rider 2 mm-hmm. and giving them different colored boots and gloves or whatever. And then V3 had, like, the turquoise colored helmet.
Yeah.
Like they have at the end of this
double
film.
Double turbines.
The whole thing. So as far as the villains go, we have Spider Og, which, well, let's go on a tie. Slow down. Spider Og, who spits like web out of his mouth. He has like dreads instead of like spider legs coming out of his helmet. You know. They're basically all people with helmets.
And he has those 2 extra arms.
And then, yeah, he has zippers that he can unzip, and he has 2 extra arms because spiders have multiple legs, you know.
Yeah.
He looks fine. Then we have Bat Og, who is a Batman.
A Batman.
But, you know, a man crossed with a bat.
He's an old scientist, dude.
Yeah, he's a scientist, virologist guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has bat wings and a bat face. And so on. Makeup job on him is pretty good.
It is.
I'm not gonna lie, it was pretty good. We'll talk about the CGI.
He's the only one that didn't have like a metal mask.
Yeah, yeah. The scorpion chick who basically just had like a Phantom of the Mask, Phantom of the Opera mask on one side,
and like a big claw,
like a claw for one hand, and then a scorpion, I think, that pitched or perched on her head. But she got killed by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Gunned down by a lot of gunmen. Wasp Og, who wore like a, I think she wore like a kimono most of the time. And then she, you know, she had the katanas and everything. And then she, of course, she had the mask. And she would take the prana of her servants and use that to power herself up.
And she had wings.
She had wings. Kamen Rider has like these wings in his back, but he can't fly. He just uses them to like cushion his landing.
Yeah.
He can jump. What did the bat guy say? He can jump 66 meters in the air, or feet in the air, or something like that. Wasp. And then I guess there's K. He's just a robot.
He's a robot.
In a nice suit.
Yeah.
He puts white flowers in his little breast pocket.
He tries to be more human. That's his whole thing.
Puts little white flowers in his breast pocket whenever somebody dies. His job is to observe humanity because I has retreated within itself and K is like its outward arm to interact with the world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which we really didn't talk about. Chakra in this show, it was created as an AI, basically, by this one guy. This one guy wanted to create happiness for everyone. This guy ended up shooting himself. But, and then I, the AI, created Jay, who was, its, like I said, its outward arm that it would interact with the world, and then upgraded him to K. But that's really all we get about the actual leadership of Shocker. They even tell us, they never told us this in the show, I think, to tell us what the acronym stands for, which I already forgot now. Something happiness, organization, for, I don't know. But anyway. So yeah, there's this. K, robot. And then we get the Butterfly Og, or Ichiro, or Kamen Rider Zero. What were you saying?
We forgot about the chameleon slash mantis.
You're right. So he's got basically like a mass that's divided half and half. Chameleon on one side, mantis on the other. He's got like a mantis blade in one of his elbows. Kind of like I told Andrew and Black Clover, that one mantis guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like the blades on his elbows. And he can also camouflage himself like a chameleon or a predator. And he has blades. He fights with like daggers or whatever. And he stabs Ruriko and kills her. Real sad. And then, yeah, Butterfly Og. At first, he's just dressed in this, like, white kimono thing and attached to his throne. And there's, like, these big, vaguely butterfly-shaped structures to each, or butterfly wing-shaped structures to each side. But then he, at the end, he turns into Kamen Rider Zero and gets, like, a, he's got, like, a purple outfit. He grows, like, a butterfly. Whatever you call it, totally blank.
Mouth
tentacle thing out of his forehead and puts on a Kamen Rider mask. And he can, like, touch them, and, like, absorb their mana or whatever.
Blast them back.
Yeah.
But then he uses up all his.
Yeah. And Ichimonj does the headbutt and breaks both their masks. And,
That's after a long rolling around on the floor session.
Yeah. But poor Hongo, he used all of his prana and he died too. You're saying.
It's different than the TV show.
Yes. In the TV show, they're. I mean, they pulled the oh, we're dead thing, but then they come back for other guest appearances. Just like in an Ultraman show where they die, but then they come back later. Unexplained.
He's pretty dead. He went all.
He did the bubble.
Bubble.
He went suds up. But anyway, what would you just do? Creature design, effects. Now, the effects, I will say, just like an Ultraman, you know, it's. I mean, I don't think there's a big difference in the quality of the effects. The difference is that in Ultraman, when the CGI was on screen, usually it was, you know, two giant creatures battling it out. In this case, I think the effects are a little more distracting because they're trying to merge them with actual humans who are on screen at the same time. For example, that when the bat guy is flying around, that looks bad.
It looks terrible.
It looks really bad. And then I think they're like the when they're all on their bikes fighting the evil Ultraman on, in the tunnels towards the end, that looks pretty bad.
Yeah,
they tried to keep it dark to kind of hide it, but it looked pretty bad.
You could tell.
Yeah, it was pretty poor CGI. And then some of the other scenes when they're like trying to do their like zoom around and jump around stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't look great. You know, again, to be fair, like I said last time, Minus One has kind of reset our expectation for what CGI can be in a Japanese film. When this came out, you didn't have a lot of great CGI in Japanese films.
No.
It's kind of par for the course. But it is a bit distracting. Kind of takes you out of a lot of the fight scenes and all that. But, you know.
But
on a positive note, the set design, the bike that they made, like I said, all the suits and everything. There's one explosion. I'm pretty sure it's a real explosion. They blow up one of the buildings. Looks really cool. All that stuff looks good.
Yeah, all the practical stuff they do looks really good.
Yeah, all the practical stuff looks good. And then score. Again, not Shirasugesu.
No.
So, no Evangelion themes this time around. This new guy, he does bring back the original theme several times.
Yes.
A couple of the original themes, which of course I appreciate. And he has some of his own new stuff too. I think the score works. You know, of course I love it when they bring back the original stuff. And the new stuff is fine. Nothing can blow you away or anything.
No, but it works. You know, it works for the movie that's in.
Yep. There is a weird kind of song choice. There's some, like, I don't know, techno-rock stuff at the beginning. Yeah. And then there's another weird song choice kind of at the end.
At the very ending song, the credits.
Yeah.
That's an odd choice of song.
Yeah. But anyway, you ready for final thoughts?
Sure.
All right, well, why don't you start?
You know, like you said, the effects in this movie, they're a little bit lackluster than with what we've seen in the past, few movies we've seen, later movies. But, you know, this was in a different time and a lower budget than some of those movies we've seen in the present times. So I'll give it a pass for that. And, you know, score is all right. It fit this movie perfectly. You know, I love a good original Kamen Rider theme song, you know. And the new stuff they had in, it was okay. It was there. Some of the songs were a little bit odd, but, you know, I got through it just fine. And the suits, the character design, the creature design, if you say, looks pretty decent on most of things. All the suits, at least. Some of the effects on them can be iffy at times. But, you know, it happens. And I like the character development in this movie was way better than the other two. Actually had main characters you could focus on except, like, 50 other people that you had to keep up with. I think I'm going to give this movie B-.
A B-. So you liked it quite a bit more than Ultraman.
What did I give Ultraman?
I think you gave it a C.
That's not quite a bit more.
Okay. Well, anyway. Yeah, listen, like I said, I think this movie hits more than it misses. I mean, I've got basically the same problems as I did with the other Shin films here. Effects are wonky at times. The kind of data dumping that you get, exposition dumps. The kind of episodic feel of the movie where it just kind of feels like they just took some of their favorite episodes and remade them and stitched them into a movie. You know, better character work this time. Not quite as segmented into episodes as Ultraman movie was. You still got the things I like about Anno. You know, he knows his stuff when he's rebooting these franchises. Lots of fun Easter eggs and references and really paying homage to the original source material. All the fun camera angles that Anno can do. All that kind of stuff. So yeah, you know, to me, it's about on par with that Ultraman movie. So I think I'll probably give this a B- as well, which is the same grade I gave that Ultraman movie. If I were ranking the Shin movies, clearly, I mean, Godzilla's not a perfect movie. I think it's clearly the best. You know, Anno and Higuchi were co-directors on that movie. And I think they're, you know, the way they kind of balanced each other out. I think Anno handled a lot of the human stuff in that. Higuchi handled most of the monster stuff in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Higuchi is better at the creature stuff than Anno is. Which, of course, this movie, they're all human-sized creatures.
Yeah.
But I think you kind of miss Higuchi's touch when it comes to the fight scenes and stuff. But Godzilla was the best. And I don't know. I think it's really a toss-up between Ultraman and Kamen Rider.
If I would have to say, I think I like this one slightly more than
Kamen Rider.
Kamen Rider slightly more than Ultraman.
I would say if I had to pick, I think this has more elements that work than the Ultraman show. Mm-hmm. So I'd rank them Godzilla, Kamen Rider, Ultraman.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got a little bit of news to talk about. Of course, our weekly update on Minus One. Minus One has been extended. Its run has been extended through at least January 11th in some theaters. I think it's currently playing at about 1,000 theaters nationwide, give or take. It will pass Demon Slayer, the Demon Slayer movie, probably Monday or Tuesday, as the second highest grossing Japanese film in America all time. It will not get to number one. That is the first Pokemon movie, which grossed like 80-some-odd million. So unless they bring Godzilla back on a big like relaunch run, it's not going to do that.
No.
But it will become number two, beat all those other anime movies. So good job on Godzilla Minus One for that, obviously. And like I think I said, it is now, of course, officially the highest grossing Japanese Godzilla film globally of all time. Not adjusted for inflation. But anyway, there's that. And then another thing that I actually just noticed this morning when I turned on the Pluto TV channel, they have, it looks like, I don't know if it's a one-time kind of deal or if they're going to start, I figure they'll probably do this at least every once in a while. They have put the Gamera movies in their lineup on the Godzilla channel on Pluto TV. Pluto has had the Gamera movies available to stream since sometime in 2022, but it looks like they've added them to their rotation on the Godzilla channel. So I think that gives it more movies to kind of mix up the lineup.
Yeah.
Because you know, if you watch it as much as I do, it's just rewatching the same movies over and over and over. You need some more content. You know, they still have, supposedly they haven't put, they have the rights to Godzilla 1985 or Return of Godzilla, whatever you want to call it. That one they haven't played yet. They got the TriStar movie, which they only played once or twice. War of the Gargantuas, but they don't play that often. And they apparently supposedly have the rights to the 2001, whatever it was, animated series that followed the TriStar movie, which they haven't played yet. So
giving it time.
I guess they're slowly mixing stuff in. Anyway.
Anyway.
I think that's all we've got for this week. You know, yeah. I want to apologize. Our audio the last 2 weeks or so has been subpar. We're breaking in a new computer today.
Yeah.
Reworked our setup a little bit, so I'm not going to know exactly what our audio sounds like until I get to recording this thing. I, as you can tell by listening to our podcast, I am definitely no recording/audio expert. I will say, you know, with video, if you have the right software and the right skills, you can fix just about anything in post. With audio, even if you have the best software and great editing skills, there's only so much you can do to fix a bad recording. And I, of course, do not have the best software. I'm using Free Audacity. And I definitely do not have the skills. So whatever we record is just pretty much what we get. I go out and edit as many as the ums as I can, because I know you probably think there's a lot in the recording. Trust me, there's a lot more before I get to cutting stuff out.
Aaron loves his
I love the I'll start on the and then and then
He did with the
And then anyway. But yeah, so thanks for sticking with us, even if we're not that pleasant to the ears every week. I definitely don't have a radio voice either. That doesn't help.
Oh, me neither.
But anyway, I think that's all we got for you this week. So coming up on our schedule, of course, next week we will, I think Friday will be the finale for Monarch Legacy of Monsters. So catch up with that if you have Apple TV, and join us next Wednesday when we do a wrap-up episode on that. The following week, I believe Blazar will have concluded the Friday before we release our new episode. So we'll do something we haven't done before. We'll do a wrap-up episode over Blazar, the latest Ultraman show. Of course, there will be a movie coming out on that in February, which we'll also do an episode over that. So those are the only two hard-set things I've got on the schedule right now. And then, of course, in April, whenever Godzilla X Kong comes out, we'll be there. Hopefully not long after opening weekend, releasing a review on that. Hopefully Dylan will join us for that. And the rest of the schedule, we're just going to kind of fill out as we go along.
Go with it, you know?
Just go with the flow. That's what we do around here. Just go with the flow. But anyway, don't forget that you can contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, which, Andrew, please tell them where they can find that website.
You can find that website at stompthisway.wordpress.com.
What?
I don't know.
Try that again.
I am fair enough. What is it again?
Stompthisway.wordpress.com.
I was naming up a lot of different websites then. Stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. Dear Lord. Dear Lord. You can also find us on Facebook, Stomp This Way, where I post weekly posts about whatever new episode we did. But other than that, I think that's all we got for you this week. As always, thank you for listening. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Aaron.
And we'll see you next week.